308156, when they come to apply on the same property, the statute is not clear which one goes first. And in that sense, this bill is trying to clarify that distinction between them. This bill also does not have a revenue impact and doesn't have a fiscal impact, and it was drafted and introduced by the Department of Revenue in order to resolve these issues.
Thank you. Mr. Fox.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Phillips with the Oregon Department of Revenue. I see that there's no overflow seating for this hearing like there is for the fishing and hunting license fees, but get right
just
to the point.
Just your presence alone makes it feel like we're overcrowded.
Thank you, Senator. Senate Bill 222 is one of several bills you'll see maybe this session and in sessions to come. It deals with issues that were that surface from time to time with overlooked issues from the implementation of Measure 50. In 97, Measure 50's implementation bill, Senate Bill 1215, had 253 pages and 466 sections, and each year we find little issues that arise that were overlooked in that. And the one in Senate Bill 222 that I bring to you today deals with exception value and how that's calculated. During the orientation, Mazin went over Measure 50's limitations on value, 3% limit, and several exceptions to that limit. And there's a statute that gives guidance to the assessors when they're calculating maximum assessed value to say, if more than one exception occurs, then do this one first, do this one second. And subsection 1 does not clearly do that, and so this bill would put an ordering to certain exceptions in that process. And it looks like you have a good feel for the issue, so I'll just go ahead and let you ask questions if you have any.
Does anyone have any questions as we wait for our fourth member to Senator Corcoran?
Mr. Chair, the only question I have is maybe I just haven't seen it, but can you calculate any kind of revenue? No expenditure impact on state or local governments, it says.
Chair Deckert, Senator Corcoran, no, there isn't. Actually, the assessors are calculating according to the way this bill proposes that the order be.
I see. So it's really no change in practice.
No change.
Okay, thank you very much.
Senator Corcoran, did you have any other questions that you might want to ask Mr. Phillips?
No, I did want to point out, though, that our revenue staff person today dresses a lot better than the former one we had. Mm-hmm. I will make that comment, Mr. Chair, just from a men's GQ standpoint, being that you're from Beaverton and kind of into that pink tie stuff.
And Mr. Chairman, it's obvious that my colleague from Cottage Grove has merely found a copy of GQ somewhere.
Tara, this could be important that we get this all on the record.
It is.
So, we're going to close. Thank you, Mr. Phillips, very much. We're going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 222.
How did you have a public hearing without a quorum? Just think it might just be a nosy.
And even at one member count on public hearing.
Oh, public hearing. Okay.
So we are in work session.
Mr. Chair?
There was a deafening silence there, wasn't there, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Corcoran.
Well, Senator Corcoran has
moved Senate Bill 222 to the floor of the Dukas recommendation.
Senator Corcoran has moved Senate Bill 222 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll put that on the consent calendar unless there's any objection. And Senator Corcoran, would you like to carry that bill?
Sure.
Terrific. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 226. Mr. Malik.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 226 basically deals with the timing that the account for the county assessment tax fund gets the transfer from the sources of revenue that it receives. The suggested change by the Senate bill that was introduced by the Department of Revenue is to go back from the last day of the month of the fiscal quarter as a cutoff date to the 21st day of the month, and make the transfer at the last day of the fiscal quarter rather than the 15th of the following month. In essence, that allows the account to be funded faster. However, there might be a very small, minimal impacts on the local funding and that account itself, just because of the shift back in the amounts of fund that 9 days less in the quarter. But that by as the time goes on, this will work itself out, and that will not be making a major impact on the revenue. And the fiscal office have not found any fiscal impacts either on locals or on the state.
Okay. Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is John Phillips, the Oregon Department of Revenue. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 226 is just that. It deals with a conflict between a deposit and a distribution. We receive the deposit by statute on the same day we're supposed to distribute it. So this puts a little bit of time between those two dates. And it actually conforms it with the practice that we've been operating with between us and the counties.
And the counties are fine with this change.
We've shared this with the counties since last spring and talked with them about it, yes. I mean, I can't speak for them, but
see, I had nodding in the background. So that's always a good sign.
What this money is money that comes in from the counties. It's brought to the department, and then it's redistributed back to the counties, and mostly to fund the assessment and taxation functions of the county. So it's money collected through delinquent interest and through recording fees, and then it funds those assessment and taxation programs. So some counties receive more money in certain quarters than they might have paid in, or vice versa, and it's all just a little bit different depending on the circumstances of the quarter and how monies came in. So if there's any questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
We will close the... Anyone else wish to testify at the counties? We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 226 and open a work session. The chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I'll move Senate Bill 226 to the floor with a do-pass.
Senator Corcoran has moved Senate Bill 226 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? And we will put that on the consent calendar unless there's any objection. And Senator Ringo, if you'd like to carry that one, that would be wonderful.
I'm carrying the bestiality bill from the judiciary. I think that's sufficient, isn't it?
Good. This one can sneak by real easily.
Fine. I will do that, Mr. Chairman.
And now I believe we have a presentation on the tax expenditure report. And we will turn the floor over to Mr. Warner and Mr. Fisher, our expert on the tax expenditure report.
He's going to be the most popular guy in the building.
Mr. Chair, if I could start off, I did find something today and over my lunch hour reading a governing magazine has a one-page summary and some rankings for the revenue system in each state. And so I just copied off the Oregon discussion for you and one perspective, kind of an outside perspective. And then on the back of that, Washington for comparison purposes to look at. But what's relevant for the upcoming discussion is about there's the next to last paragraph. It does refer to the state's tax expenditure report is one of the best in the nation.
Yes.
So this the tax expenditure report we have now is part of the governor's budget release. It actually comes out simultaneously to that. You have copies of the 0305. It was passed in 95, requiring the revenue department to do so, and the revenue department has assigned this to its research section, and Craig Fisher is the manager of that research section.
Mr. Fisher, and just one opening comment is I've heard this from others. I've been looking through the report, and it is, I would concur with Governing Magazine. The one difficulty that I found is getting through it and finding the data, I guess, is just so abundant, is finding, being able to search through it and find the real pearls there. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, and thank you for
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Craig Fisher. I'm the research manager for the Department of Revenue. As Paul mentioned, what I'd like to do today is describe for you the tax expenditure report, a little bit about how it's constructed, and hopefully provide you with an ability to use the document, and so it would be a useful information resource for you. The concept of tax expenditures relate to those provisions of tax law that impart some special treatment to groups of taxpayers, that is, income that's excluded from taxation or deductions or property tax exemptions, income tax credits. All of these provisions are termed tax expenditures in the sense that they can be compared to direct spending. That is, if you've reduced the revenue stream through provision of a credit, for example, a pollution control credit, for the acquisition of pollution abatement equipment, that can be viewed as comparable to directly spending in the natural resource area. So the term tax expenditure really derives from that similarity between the direct spending and the indirect spending, if you will, through the tax system. The concept isn't a particularly new one. The federal government has produced tax expenditure reports for probably the last 30 years, and the majority of the states produce them. Although, as we talk about it, Oregon's is one of the more extensive tax expenditure reports, in part because of the requirements that are in statute. As Paul mentioned, the tax expenditures report is required through the Budget Accountability Act, which was passed by the 1995 legislature. That act explicitly recognized the similarity between tax expenditures and direct spending. In the preamble to the legislation, there is a direct reference to the fact that these can be viewed as similar concepts. Again, as Paul mentioned, the governor submits this report to the legislature each session together with the recommended budget, and that emphasizes that comparability between direct spending on the recommended budget side and indirect spending, if you will, for those tax expenditures that are represented in the report. And the Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Revenue are directed through the Budget Accountability Act to assist the governor, advise and assist the governor in the preparation of the report. Specifically, the tax expenditures are defined in the Budget Accountability Act, and I've got the text of the definition here. It really points out that any law of the federal government or this state that exempts in whole or in part certain persons, income, goods, services, or property from the impact of established taxes. And then the statute provides some examples, some that I've mentioned, deductions, exclusions, subtractions, etc. The thing I'll point out about the specific definition of tax expenditures that's in statute here is that it's quite broad, in that by including any law of the federal government, that means because Oregon's income tax program ties to the federal definition of taxable income, any tax expenditure, any exclusion or deduction that's defined at the federal level then will flow through and be a tax expenditure in Oregon. So the definition there, by referring to any law of the federal government or the state, includes all of those federal tax expenditures. And so it's quite a broad definition. What I've done to give you a sense roughly about how these are broken down is I've split all of the tax expenditures in our most recent report into three categories: those that relate to the income tax program, those that relate to the property tax program, and those that relate to other tax programs. There are about 15 tax programs that are considered by this report. But as you can see, of the 350 total tax expenditures in the report, 192 of them relate to the income tax program, 117 of them relate to property taxes, and then 41 of them, there's essentially a handful in these other tax programs that that are defined as tax expenditures. Just to give you a kind of a sense of the magnitude of these, this next column provides the most recent forecast of anticipated revenues for each of these tax programs. So the most recent state economist forecast is looking for about $8.5 billion in income tax revenues. Property tax revenues for 0103 are expected to be about $6.6 billion. And the revenue for these other 13 tax programs that are included in the report is about $3.4 billion for a total of about $18.5 billion. Now, when we estimate the revenue impact of the tax expenditures, this is the final column here. So these 192 income tax expenditures represent a revenue reduction of approximately $7 billion, $6.9 billion. So this is what's actually expected. This is the amount of the tax expenditures. The property tax side has some very large numbers, and I'll caution you that these are, I don't know if the term distorted is too strong, but there are a couple of very large tax expenditures on the property tax side. In fact, intangible personal property, that is financial records such as checking accounts and business intangibles, are included in there. That's about a $10 billion expenditure. So that $18.2 billion here is really influenced by about a half a dozen very large expenditures. Federal property is exempt from the property tax rolls. That's about $3.5 billion. So even though that $18 billion is a very large number, it is influenced very strongly by those, a few very large expenditures. And then finally, in the other category, as you can see, of these 41, there's only about $40 million of tax expenditures in all those programs. There's a very small representation in all these other programs. To go a little bit further into the income tax expenditures, I mentioned that there were 192 of them. Let me try to break down the components of that a little bit further. If you look at this, the full size of this bar chart, this is essentially the sum of the actual receipts that are expected for 0103 and then the amount of the tax expenditures. From that prior slide, this was at $8.4 billion and this was at $6.9 billion, this amount. And so you can see that of the 192, there are about 64 of those that represent federal exclusions. And that is, this is income that is not taxed at the federal level. It's not recognized as taxable income. Examples of this include employer-provided medical care, scholarship income, Social Security benefits or public assistance benefits. This is all income that is not taxed at the federal level and consequently not taxed in Oregon, and so it represents exclusion. This amount on the federal exclusion side is about $3.2 billion. Moving down this bar then, there are also federal deductions that flow through to Oregon. There are about 43 of these, representing about $1.7 billion. And they include such things as deductions for charitable contributions, mortgage interest deduction, deduction for medical and dental expenses, Section 179 expensing allowance, which basically allows small businesses to expense purchases of property instead of depreciating them. And property taxes are examples of the federal deductions that then flow through to Oregon and become tax expenditures in Oregon. Moving down to the third pink area there, these are Oregon subtractions. These are Oregon-specific subtractions. There are 29 of these representing a little over $1 billion. And these include things like the federal pension income, federal income tax subtraction, interest on federal obligations, the additional medical subtraction for the elderly, and Social Security benefits. Actually, the federal exclusion excludes a portion of Social Security. Oregon excludes the remainder of that. And then finally, there are Oregon credits. There are about 56 Oregon credits representing about $1 billion. Examples include the earned income credit, pollution control credit, political contribution credit, and the credit for donations to the Trust for Cultural Development. So that's essentially how those 192 income tax expenditures are broken down in their various components. Okay, the Budget Accountability Act requires very specific information to be included in the report. And I'll just step through the requirements here. It's necessary to provide the statutory authority for each of these expenditures. We need to identify what the purpose of each expenditure is. We need to produce a revenue loss estimates both for the current biennium, in this case 01-03, and for the next biennium, for 03-05 is in this particular report. I'll talk a little bit more about revenue estimate issues in a bit. The expenditures are to be grouped according to programs or functions, and this is back to that comparability between direct budget expenditures and indirect budget expenditures. We're asked to group these according to their budget programs where possible. There's a requirement that each expenditure be evaluated according to its actually along two lines. They are to be evaluated according to whether they accomplish their purpose and according to whether they are the most fiscally effective means of accomplishing their purpose. So the Budget Accountability Act has that as a requirement in the provision of information in the tax expenditure report. And I'll talk a little bit more later about how those evaluations are conducted. Some information around who benefits from these various tax expenditures is requested. And finally, for those tax expenditures that are scheduled to expire in the next biennium, that is, they'll sunset in 03-05, the governor is required to make a recommendation about whether or not those sunsets should be allowed to happen or whether they should be extended to a different date. Just to illustrate a little bit of I showed you earlier how the tax expenditures were broken down generally by tax program. This is for those tax expenditures that we can associate with a specific budget area. I've just identified the relative magnitudes of them by program areas, and these would correspond to the same general program areas that you would see in the recommended budget. And so, for example, the education category represents things like the scholarship income exclusion, charitable contributions to educational institutions, the Oregon qualified tuition savings subtraction, and even on the property tax side, there's a property tax exemption for higher education parking spaces. The human services, examples of those types of expenditures are the exclusion of public assistance income, charitable contributions for health institutions, medical savings accounts, and the rural medical practice credit, which is an Oregon-specific credit to encourage medical providers to provide their services in rural areas. In the economic and community development area, this would include such things as accelerated depreciation, the working family child care credit, the research credit, the affordable housing credit, and the strategic investment property tax exemption. Natural resources program area includes such things as pollution control credit, the alternative energy device credit, business energy facilities credit, farm machinery and equipment property tax exemption, and a historic property property tax exemption. And then finally, in the transportation budget area, this is predominantly comprised of the property tax exemption on motor vehicles. A lot of this 9% is represented by that, as well as employer-provided transportation payments. So that gives you a sense. For those that map somewhat neatly into the budget categories, this gives you an idea of how they're distributed by their size. And this chart really gives numbers behind those. The chart I was showing you earlier really represents these five budget categories. There are some, as I mentioned before, federal law prohibits the state from taxing federal property, and these very large, like the business intangibles property tax exemption, are included here. They're not associated with any specific budget category. They're in the program area, or functional areas, rather. If I could just briefly describe to you the evaluation process for these tax expenditure reports. the first thing that happens is that prior to the publication of each of these reports, is the Department of Revenue needs to identify any new or modified expenditure. And that could include any changes in federal law that will in turn translate into Oregon tax expenditures. So if there have been any federal legislation passed, we would need to take that into account, or any tax expenditures that are new from the prior Oregon legislative session. We then provide that information, as well as information about the existing expenditure reports that may have been unchanged, to agencies that have program responsibility or subject matter expertise. That is, we would ask, for example, in a child care credit, for example, we would ask the child care division of the Department of Employment to take a look at that. The pollution control credit, we would ask the Department of Environmental Quality to take a look at that. So for those agencies that have specific subject matter expertise on that, they're the agencies that we provide this information to, and there are actually about over two dozen of agencies that we work with. The agencies perform the evaluations, and then those evaluations are reviewed by the Department of Administrative Services, Budget Management folks, and by the Governor's Office. So fundamentally, to reiterate, the evaluations of the effectiveness of the expenditures are done by agencies that have program responsibility or subject matter expertise in the specific areas. As I mentioned, the governor needs to make a recommendation for those expenditures that are scheduled to sunset, and this next slide shows there are five scheduled for the next in the 03-05 biennium. There are three income tax credits and two property tax exemptions that are scheduled to sunset at these various times. And this provides the governor's recommendation. In this case, there are two of the credits. The recommendation is to allow the sunset, and one of the credits, two of the property tax exemptions, the recommendation is to extend. If I could just briefly point out a few revenue estimating issues. There are a number of interactions between these tax expenditures that make, in fact, I've shown you a lot of charts that aggregate these tax expenditures by tax program or by budget program, and virtually every tax expenditure report will start off with qualifying language about how you can't add these up, and I'll do that at the end instead of the beginning, but because a lot of these are related, it is difficult to get a cumulative effect. You may remove one tax expenditure report, but there will be a compensating, there may be a property tax exemption, for example, that by removing the exemption, there may be property that will actually apply under another exemption, so the revenue yield from that may or may not be the amount that's spent through there. So that interaction between expenditures makes something to note. These are static estimates in that we don't incorporate any behavioral change that that would result. In the property tax area, we actually identify two types of revenue impact. We identify both losses and shifts. The losses on the property tax side can be viewed as if you've removed property from the rolls, you've exempted that property, taxing districts cannot apply their rate to that property, so there's a direct loss of revenue to the district. But in addition to that, in the case of, say, there is a bond for a fixed amount in a particular district, that bond will be paid by the property within the boundaries of that district. So by removing some of the property from the district, the remaining property essentially pays that bond. So some of the result of the exemption is a direct loss of revenue to the district, and some of the result is actually the taxes being paid by other property owners within that district. So in the property tax revenue impact section, we provide both those loss and shift components. And finally, on the revenue estimating issues, we work with Legislative Revenue Office and Office of Economic Analysis as a matter of course, but we try to, in a systematic way, ask them to review the methodology that's used for these tax expenditure revenue estimates before we publish it.
You trust those guys?
Yes, we do.
They're the ones that gave away all the kickers in the 90s. Why would you trust them?
No, Senator, you did it.
No, this particular senator.
didn't do it, as a matter of fact, buddy. I'm just trying to lighten this guy's game here because I'm just pretty dry.
In summary, Mr. Chair, this report provides detailed information about Oregon's tax system. Your point earlier about it is quite a cumbersome document. I agree to that. In fact, we are always looking for ways to make it clearer. One of the things that we attempted to add this publication was an index, actually, a keyword index in the back that might help folks identify them. But what I might point you to is the report really is a catalog of all of these expenditures, but there are two tables in the front of this that we've attempted to put in here to help folks follow them. The first table, I believe, is on page 9, and this essentially lists all of these tax expenditures according to tax program, and then within tax program they're sorted by budget program. But if you start off on page 9, you can see that we start with all the federal exclusions. This essentially follows the way that taxes are calculated. You start off with a comprehensive definition of income. What comes up front is all of the federal exclusions. If you follow that through the next page, those are all the federal deductions, and all of the Oregon subtractions, all of the Oregon credits. So that first table attempts to follow the sort of the definition of the tax. But then table 2, which is on page 17, starts on page 17, attempts to sort these 350 tax expenditures by program area. So if you want to see, for example, all of those that relate to education, you can see all those up front, and then they're sorted first by income tax and then property tax, and they go down the line. But that is another way to use those, so that when we put this book together, we feel that the indexes are a good starting point for those. And then by using the numbers associated with each of these, you can find them in the book to find the particular detail. I might also point out in summary that this report is the result of work by over 30 agencies. Really, these evaluations are conducted by a variety of subject matter specialists. And my final point is that we really would appreciate feedback about the usefulness of the publication. I mean, statute defines the specific content that's required in the report, but we'd be more than happy to try to incorporate any usability improvements that we can. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. I'd be more than happy to answer questions.
Thank you. And Mr. Warner, as he pointed out in the opening, Governing Magazine at least indicated that the usefulness is pretty significant compared to other states. So I certainly appreciate the detail and the ability, at least quickly, to go to different sections of the report. Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. A couple things. Some of these charts relate to the loss and then the shift. What is the shift?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, on the property tax expenditures, we've provided two components. When property is exempt from taxation and removed from the roll, the taxing district can no longer apply its rates to it. It won't pay taxes to that district. So that's a direct loss of revenue to that district. But a taxing district may impose, for example, a bond that has a fixed amount that will be repaid from property taxes. So in that case, the bond being a fixed amount, if property is removed from taxation, the bond will be repaid by the remaining property. So essentially, by removing that property, you have the direct loss of revenue to the district, but you've also had the remaining taxpayers in that district pick up that bond portion. So that's what we mean by shift.
Okay, so just for example, war veterans and nonprofit elderly housing, $50,000 lost, $10,000 shift. That means that $10,000 is being picked up by the other property owners in that area?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that's exactly what it means.
Okay. And the $50,000 loss is to the local taxing entity?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that's exactly right.
Okay, thanks. One other question, just flipping through here, capital gains on gifts.
What page?
I'm sorry, page 75. This is a state connection to the federal gift deduction. First of all, I'm I just want to clarify, the $41 million is the reduction to the state taxes, not the federal taxes, correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that's correct.
Okay. And could you explain for a minute what these gifts are? Are these donations to Salvation Army, or are these transfers between relatives? What are these?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, these would be gifts. Transfers between relatives would probably be the most common example of that. The charitable contributions would be deducted under a federal deduction that would fall under a different category.
It
would be transfers between. It doesn't necessarily have to be relatives. It could be
anybody.
Right.
To give you a top question, what's the federal law on gift deduction? I mean, it's if I give Ryan $10,000, what happens? What's the taxable impact?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, I can. If you want a detailed explanation of that, we might.
No.
I can give it. Basically, the gift the estate tax is a comprehensive. The federal estate tax is a comprehensive gift and estate tax. So there is basically an annual exclusion. I believe it's $20,000 that you can provide without qualifying for the transfer tax.
So the amount we're talking about here is that exclusion under that amount. I'll follow up with you.
Okay.
I'll follow up. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Unless Tony knows.
Senator Corcoran.
Well, speaking to the effectiveness of this, I think I'm the only one that was here in 95. I think that it's highly effective. We in the progressive community rely on it very heavily. We never get anything done with it because the wrong people are in control of this building, but that's another point. I just have some questions in general. I've submitted some legislation, and I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you about is Elizabeth Martin Marr gave me an overview on the property value question that didn't quite get to. She had done this for Representative Beck last session, and didn't quite get to the question I had, which, and I talked to Paul a little bit about this. The total under 1.134, exception number or expenditure 1.134. They go in order. It's between 1.133 and 1.135. I don't know what page. I don't have the page open. I'm sorry. Anyway, it's $597 million, and that's home mortgage interest. That's my understanding that includes, and you guys are unable to disaggregate second homes from that. What Elizabeth calculated in her analysis is that we have something on the order of the 1990 census estimated we had about 32,000 recreational or occasional homes. And she assumed a 2% growth rate. And anyway, it's estimated 2001, there are 38,000 recreational or occasional homes. And my assumption is, first of all, that they get the interest break. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I'm not sure it's in all cases, but I'm looking.
Well, if they had paid off their mortgage, they would.
He gave you the wrong number.
Yeah,
1.083.
Okay.
1.083 is right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
But Senator Corcoran, if they're paying, if they borrowed money for the residents and they're paying interest on that, they can deduct it. Yes. Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's one of my questions, and then the other is, can we assume then that we are granting this deduction to the mortgages on second homes? And I think the answer is yes. I think the next question then is, is it true that the Department of Revenue or whomever prepares this particular report, because it's an income tax question, an income tax break, But it's my understanding from talking to Paul that the Department of Revenue can't disaggregate in filing that a person is claiming mortgage on a second home or recreational home versus their primary residence.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, that's correct. The amount is a line item on the itemized deduction schedule. It doesn't distinguish between first, second, or vacation homes. Or
one thing Elizabeth did was value the estimated value difference between real and market and real market assessed value per second home. So she did some estimates on what this tax benefit was, and essentially what I want to be able to do, and I don't know if I'm asking you this or the Department of Revenue, you are the Department of Revenue, and or Paul, but what I need is if we pass legislation to remove that exemption, what would that be worth?
The entire exemption?
So no, just on second homes. And I also want to verify that houseboats and yachts would qualify under this exemption, or do they qualify under the pleasure boat exemption? Because I've heard contradictory stories. I've heard that there's a fellow with a yacht who writes off the mortgage interest because he can live on the yacht. And then I've heard then there's also this pleasure boat exception that basically says you don't have to pay property taxes with certain types of pleasure boats.
Okay, but Senator, you've got income taxes in terms of your interest deductions,
right.
And you got property taxes in terms of the pleasure boats.
That's I understand.
Okay. Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. I've heard both, though.
And
that you get the income tax break on the
floating homes and boathouses don't apply on the pleasure boats for the property.
Okay.
They're excluded.
So they do, in fact, get taxed, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay. And so I'm just curious about the question of the yacht.
Senator, just to pitch in on that same subject, I think it would be interesting to know what we would save if we didn't allow the home mortgage interest deduction above certain values of the home, whether you were to pick $200,000, $300,000, you know, whether a home, the interest amount above a $500,000 mortgage ought to be deducted. I'd be interested in those figures, too.
Senator, we have looked at some revenue impacts of setting a cap of $20,000 per year or $25,000 per year. On the amount of interest you can deduct in a given year. That would get at indirectly the larger mortgages. We have those numbers.
Yeah, I think you've got some sheet you can pull out of a file, right?
Yes, we do have those.
I think you've given it to me before.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what I need to see then. Yeah.
So we're capping it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then,
further questions?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. It 2077 is the pleasure boat for next biennium. It's $26 million loss, $5 million shift.
Page 271.
271, yes.
Or 2.077 for Senator Corcoran.
Right. The $26 million is then property taxes that are essentially foregone by the schools and local governments.
Well, Mr. Fisher, can you give me the mechanics? I've asked, and it's on this pleasure boat. It's on the same subject. I've asked for the mechanics of how this functions, that pleasure boat property tax exemption.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I'm not sure I could do that today. With all 350 of these, I'm not intimately familiar with them, but I'd be happy to provide you with some additional background about how it works. And
more the mechanics. I'm trying to glean it from, and this does a very good job, and not meaning to cut in on your question.
No, that's fine. I was going to go the same direction. Yeah.
Okay. This does, and Paul, you may know this also. This does a very good job, but I was trying to get the ins and outs of that particular one. Assuming, and I was trying to put myself in the place of someone that would want to claim it just to understand fully from the citizen perspective and not obviously from a revenue perspective how it operates.
Mr. Chair, I'll gather more information for you on that particular.
Marine Board.
Marine Board.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
So I want to be clear. This is 1.056 capital gains inherited property. And that is page 75.
75 is between...
between the gun and the pistol. That's in the evaluation. It says the expenditure achieves its purpose of providing tax relief to heirs. And then it has this explanation about congressional research, the failure to tax capital gains of death is probably one of the primary causes of the lock-in effect. Can you walk through that explanation and tell me what that means?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think it's if an individual has held property for a long time, there may be a reluctance to sell that property because of the taxation on capital gains. If it's appreciated a great deal in value, there's what's referred to as a lock-in effect or a reluctance to sell it because of that. I mean, they're generally that's...
that would have to be something other than your personal home, though, right? Because you'd get the capital gains exemption under that.
That's correct.
Okay. So it's property other than, it's inherited property other than the, when you say someone's reluctant to sell because the property appreciates because of the tax consequences, that implies to me that you could only be selling property other than your own home, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, that's correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure on some of these that, you know, I mean, I'd like to look at, I mean, this is a massive, I mean, and when you list a total impact of $444 million, that you're comfortable with that figure. It was $374 for, I was wondering if you could explain the jump from $374 to $444.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, the revenue estimates in this publication, particularly on the federal exclusions, we rely on Joint Committee on Taxation information, and to a certain extent, we share that to Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, on some of the
so you might have taken 1% of a federal number, for instance, for Oregon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, we attempt to establish based on Joint Committee estimates what a national number is, and then we determine how much of that national number would be, how many capital gains, for example, on inherited property would be, would exist nationally, and then how much of that would exist in Oregon. And depending on Oregon's circumstances, that might be more or less in any particular case.
Okay.
But then we would apply the Oregon income tax structure to that. On some of the expenditures, we have very specific return data that allows us to provide a little bit higher level of precision. On some of these, it's more difficult. In particular, I mean, when you think of exclusions, this is income that's not taxed. In the case of property tax exemptions, this is property that is not on the roll. So often there isn't a lot of resource devoted to assigning value to that. So the report has a mixed structure in terms of the level of precision that the estimates have.
Right.
This particular one uses Joint Committee, a national federal Joint Committee on Taxation numbers as a starting point.
So, Mr. Chair, then LRO would have to rely on the same information if we were to ask them for an estimate on what the impact is. Basically.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I think that'd be a starting point for them.
Okay. The other one that I'd like an explanation of is the 1094, which is on page 105, multi-period timber growing costs.
Mr.
Mr. Fisher, you'll notice that the Democrats have all stayed for this portion and are just into it in great detail.
It says in the evaluation, it is not clear if this expenditure is achieving its purpose. And I just wondered if the person who helped reach that conclusion could maybe come in and talk to us about their analysis. Because again, it's pretty hefty. I mean, it's $34 million in 0305 revenue impact. And I want to make sure that it's the full $35 million because, like, I, you know, if you look at pollution control, 1175, and it says that it's, you know, $22,800,000, but in fact, it isn't anywhere near that. It's like 10% of that because it's over X years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, I will look into that multi-period timber, and you're correct that some of these credits, because of unused credits, can be carried forward in the future years, and because some of them have, in the pollution control credit, it's a good example of that. It is, there is a difference then between this amount and the amount that would be raised would it, if it were eliminated.
And that's something that you would be pointing us, I'm sure, if we asked. I mean, I submitted a bill that contains these exemptions, so.
I think we'll get the
I felt pretty open. Opening it up broader in my discussions with other folks on this committee.
That's pretty much all I.
With the art of what you actually could get out.
Let me ask you this, though. What would Lane do?
Okay, and you're going to look at the ceiling on a.
Let me make sure I understand, Senator. On the second homes, what we can do is look or make an estimate of the proportion of those mortgage deductions that are associated with second homes.
Okay.
And then so we'd have a proportion of the total tax expenditure.
Okay.
And it's going to be, you know, the neighborhood of probably 5 or 6%, something in that range. And we'll see if we can get some data to back up that estimate. That will be tied to the numbers that Elizabeth gave you. We can convert those into some mortgage estimate and give you that piece of it.
Okay.
So I think we can, it'll be an estimate, but I think we can do that.
And will you figure out if yachts are included, if yachts qualify for mortgage interest deductions? Just so that's either urban, you know, urban mythology, or it's true. I just like to figure out which it is.
Okay, I would guess that revolves around primary residence question, but we'll look into that.
I believe it's excluded, based on my reading of the pleasurable, but based on primary residence. But I guess we'll get the final verdict.
Yeah.
But sir, when you talk about yachts, or you're talking in terms of the pleasure boats, or you're talking in terms of the second home?
Well, I'm a Democrat, so I don't know the difference between any of them.
Okay, well.
They're all in a little bottle.
Well, I mean, Tony, some of these boats, my understanding is if a boat has a bathroom in it, then that puts it in a different tax category.
I see.
And because then people do use them as homes.
And then it's a property tax
right.
question versus a
yeah.
an income. This is, I mean, what I'm primarily interested in is the income deduction at this point, because I would want to see, you know, if it's worth the effort to, you know, to do the bill, because, I mean, the way things are in this building and the reports we're getting on the upcoming forecasts, we've already stolen from all the piggy banks, so this is about the only place we can go.
We're working.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Really appreciate the presentation and the report, and kudos on Governing Magazine recognizing us.
Thank you.
Committee, we're going to begin. We're ending the informational hearing process, and so we're going to begin hearing bills. We were going to try to start right at 1 and need a quorum to go into work session. So, though it is just into the future, it can be difficult to be right at 1, but we're going to do our best.
It's not just tomorrow only.
We're going to start with tomorrow and then try to work from there.
One day at a time, Mr. Chair.
I want to
think broadly, Mr. Chair.
With that, thank you, and we're adjourned.